you have to wear an oven mitt when you take the pigs in the blankets out of the oven. We all do that, right? Or otherwise, you'll burn your hand.
Absolutely.
This is the Fantasy Focus Baseball Podcast. Here are your hosts, Tristan Cockcroft and Eric Carabel.
Hi there, and welcome to Fantasy Focus Baseball. It's a beautiful Thursday morning, July 20th, 2017. I'm Eric, he's AJ Mass, and we're going to preview the big weekend of baseball. AJ, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm very happy to be healthy, and you know, I didn't get traded, and that's not necessarily the case for most players out there, it seems.
You know, being traded may not be such a bad thing. You know, I mean, David Phelps is the latest I hear going to a team that thinks it's contending. You know, going to a better team could help. I don't know.
How could we possibly go to a better team than the one we've got right here, sir?
And by the way, are you aware, AJ, it's National Moon Day? And I plan on, well, I don't know, mooning. I don't know. Let's see how the show goes first. Or maybe later I'll just listen to Walking on the Moon by the Police. I haven't decided yet. That's probably a safer thing to say for the show. Anyway, lots to discuss today as we preview the weekend. We talk a little bit about Wednesday night's baseball action. Here is the buzz. All right, Yoan Moncada's debut with the White Sox. He batted sixth. I watched his first at bat. I think it was a 9-pitch walk, and I was like, hey, that's pretty good for a guy who has some swing and miss issues. Didn't get any hits, but you know, you can't make too many judgments. He is the most added player right now in ESPN leagues, and I'm cool with that.
Yeah, it was funny. I, of course, tuned in for that as well, and it was very funny to hear the announcers of the game really going, wow, look at the way he didn't swing at that pitch. It's amazing. So, I mean, yeah, there's hype here.
There's a lot of hype. You know, we'll see what he ends up doing, but he's up to, as we're doing the show, 44.4% ownership, which is pretty good, up 25% in the last week, really in the last 24 hours, I would say. And there's a couple of guys on the most added list, which I think are pretty interesting. Tommy Pham, St. Louis is obviously going to keep on playing. He's been hitting. They've got two of their starting three outfielders on the disabled list, so he'll keep playing. He's a guy to watch this weekend. Gerardo Parra, the Rockies. That Rocky situation is so interesting to me. Parra batted third yesterday. I don't think he's just going to suddenly get benched. I don't think we're seeing David Dahl this season with the Rockies.
No, in fact, the 60 days was up, and they had to activate him, and they activated him right where he was, rehabbing at AAA. So I agree. I don't know that there's an opening there unless there's some sort of trade in the works featuring one of the outfielders.
What else happened? J.D. Martinez debuted with Arizona, two strikeouts, and then he gets hit by a pitch in the hand. Look, if you have a shot to get J.D. Martinez in your NL-only league, do it. He's going to hit, going to put up numbers. If you need pitching more, then you wait and hope that Sonny Gray ends up in the National League. But there's, what, 11 days before the trade deadline. And, of course, we'll be here on this show and in ESPN Fantasy to cover it all. I don't know where Sonny Gray's going. It could be Milwaukee, but it might be Boston. I don't know. So, anyway.
Could be the Yankees at this point. I mean, you know, why not? Like, you know, do one of those Yankee special preemptive strikes and just take everybody.
So, Nolan Arenado hit three home runs, which isn't a big surprise. It was at Coors Field. It was against Padres pitching. But I looked further into Arenado's numbers, and I'm not gonna like say that this is something bad. But man, a lot of those numbers. I mean, his OPS against lefties is over 1,200, and a lot of those numbers come at Coors Field. If Arenado's not getting traded to another team, like if he ended up in Cleveland tomorrow, he wouldn't put these numbers up. From a fantasy standpoint, he's a lock for the first round next year, though. I mean, we can't say anything other than that, right?
Yeah, I think so. Basically, you know, you get this kind of production at a position where this is the production that you are looking for. He's a, you know, a player who's giving you production at a position that you want. So, of course, he's got to be a first rounder.
But I mean, I can't but help but wonder if he were to be dealt this offseason, where would we dump him? Fourth round? You know?
I don't know if we dump him that low. I mean, the road splits aren't that horrible. It's still just under 300 batting average with 10 home runs. So I don't think he's like completely a Coors Field creation here. I don't know that we'd lower him all that much.
He's
maybe
not
second
Casey
round.
McGee. I'm not saying he's Casey McGee or something like that. Or, you know, like when Matt Holliday left Colorado, he did fine. It's just, I didn't realize, I thought last year's splits were a little bit more even, lefty-righty, home road. Anyway, we're wasting time. He's really good. Don't worry about him. But keep an eye on what Colorado does with Mark Reynolds, with Ian Desmond. Trevor Story actually hit, so he keeps and it could be possible Colorado would never even sit Trevor Story at all for Ian Desmond or anybody else. It's possible they never even discussed it. David Dahl, if you own him in a league, I wouldn't expect him to play in the majors this season. Pitching side from yesterday, James Paxton. What would it take for James Paxton to crack your top 20 starting pitchers? Another month of this?
Another month of this. Yeah, I mean, he's not too far off. He's number 27 right now for me, and that was before seeing that one. He'll creep up a little bit. I'm sure a guy like Charlie Morton will probably creep back seeing what he did, which wasn't horrible but wasn't, like, Paxton-esque. So, yeah, I think we're probably a week away. One more, two.
Yeah, I mean, what is impressive to me is, and we discussed this on Wednesday's show, how when pitchers have a tough schedule, like we mentioned, I think it was Waka, we mentioned his schedule coming up isn't so so fortuitous. But Paxton has pitched against Houston, the best team in the American League, three times, and he's allowed one run in 20 innings. So that would mean he's matchup-proof, right? I mean, unless he's at Coors Field, I can't see any reason why I wouldn't want to use James Paxton or I wouldn't recommend him in DFS at this point.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, when you look at rankings, especially for starting pitchers, because obviously teams have to use enough of them to fill all those roster spots. You know, it's not necessarily a strict thing where you only have five. Some people like to go seven. Some people, you know, like to do like what I do in a points league where it's, you know, one ace and a bunch of streamers. So it generally varies. But I basically say there's usually at any given time there's four or five elite who are above everybody else. Then there's another tier of about 10, and then another tier of about 15. And that's kind of how you have to look at it. And he's in that tier of 15. So I don't think there's any issue here in terms of worrying about the matchup for him. It's just a question of whether he's ready to take that next step and move into the elite.
And I glossed over this in the Arizona lineup. David Peralta led off on Wednesday. He's sitting Thursday against a right-hander, which I don't like as a Peralta owner. But he led off Wednesday, and I wonder if that might become a thing in the future. Because that was certainly up his value, although he was batting second most of the time against right-handers anyway. But something to keep an eye on, because David Peralta is really good against right-handed pitching. Another name for you here, Aaron Sanchez. Another blister problem.
Yeah.
Did we just give up at this point on Aaron Sanchez? It was so good last year, but some of those numbers last year weren't supported by the peripherals. But, I mean, it's mid-July, AJ. I mean, how much more do we put up with Aaron Sanchez?
I don't even know that we're going to have to make that call. I think we're going to see another trip to the DL as a result of this, at which point I think that decision's made for you, certainly. At least you'll be able to stash him if you have the DL spot and he's the guy that's hurt on your team, although I can't imagine that you only have one this season with all the 10-day DLs. But, yeah, I think that we're not going to see a lot of the Sanchez going forward.
All right, let's have a little closer carousel here.
The closer carousel.
As expected, Tyler Clippard will get the first call for the White Sox. And, you know, we can look at his numbers and say it's not going to last long, go at Anthony Swarzak, but it's a new team. He might also be good. He has a long history of doing well. I know we talked about him quite a bit yesterday, but the White Sox did acknowledge Clippard gets the first call. More saves the rest of the year, Tyler Clippard or Anthony Swarzak?
Oh, I think it's definitely Clippard. I think Swarzak is not on this team in 2 weeks. I think that I had said that I thought perhaps Swarzak would get one or two save chances just to kind of, you know, pump his value a little bit. But I think he's also going to be part of this White Sox sell-off.
I think Clippard could get traded, too. I mean, right?
I suppose it's possible, yeah. I mean, look, Rick Hahn is saying anyone and everyone, you know, if they were on the roster at the beginning of the season, so Moncada, obviously, not part of the list, but if they were here in April, come take a look. And Clippard certainly wasn't here in April, but I don't think he's got any loyalty to him. He'll sell, I'm sure.
You know who leads all relief pitchers and wins above replacement?
I do not.
I looked it up, and then I wrote about it. Kind of. I wrote about 10 undervalued relief pitchers, underrated relief pitchers in fantasy, and one of them actually leads all relievers in WAR, still available in like half of ESPN's leagues. It's Pittsburgh's closer, Felipe Rivera, who isn't really piling on the saves, but he has job security, he has the numbers. The numbers are terrific. He just doesn't have a lot of saves because Pittsburgh doesn't present him with a lot of saves, but, you know, go at him, people. He's available, and he's really, really good. Washington could really use him right now. I also wrote in that column, I think Keone Kayla is the Texas closer, and that could happen as soon as today when he comes off the disabled list. Do you think Alex Claudio's keeping this job? He's a lefty. And Matt Bush has been so bad recently. I mean, they can't even use him in the seventh inning anymore after what happened last night. I think Kayla has a shot here to be a closer soon.
Yeah, I think because Claudio is a lefty, and you know, left-handed closers are not usually a thing that managers rely on for whatever reason. They just seem to think that they're better for that one batter out thing, or use him in the eighth as a setup man. I think Claudio may be able to hold on to it since he's been so hot, especially since Kayla's coming off the DL. He might want to ease him into those high-pressure situations. But would I be surprised if there's a switch at some point or some sort of committee? No, not at all.
You know who I'd sell high on? Corey Knebel, who I was real high on in March and said he would get the job. He did. But lately, he's having some problems. And that outing last night, another walk. He's been walking on people recently. A couple blown saves this month. Giving up hits now. I don't know if he's tired. I don't know if people are catching up to him. Whatever the case is, he couldn't close out the win over Pittsburgh. And that was also the first time he failed to strike out a batter in an outing this season. And he's had a tremendous season. But you always sell on closers at this time of the year because you can get a lesser closer and something else good in the deal. So, if you can trade Knebel for Jim Johnson and Ryan Braun, you do it. I mean, somebody might do something like that because Knebel's numbers are outstanding.
Oh, absolutely. I think you definitely, you should never be married to your closers, especially as the year starts to wind down, because even if a closer has been lights out perfect, zero ERA, zero whip, like pretty much it's almost impossible to have a season where there's not one or two bad outings. And as you get closer and closer to the end of the season and you haven't had those one or two bad outings, they're probably coming. So why not trade for a pitcher who has already been through that patch and just play the percentages on that? I think it's a no-brainer there.
And by the way, when you have an ERA of 1.79, but a WHIP of 1.21, believe the WHIP. The WHIP is actually high for a closer. So I'm selling here.
I would agree with you in principle that in the past, however, relievers closed and they would come in the eighth inning for an extra out or two. So the runners that they gave up, their ERA was not always the runs that were charged to them. Now with them starting in the ninth, I think the ERA is a lot closer to the true ERA than it was in years past. So I think that disparity between ERA and WHIP is growing, shrinking a lot more than it was in the past, where you could probably argue that, well, they're not as good as their ERA suggests. I think their ERA is closer to a true ERA these days.
Let's get to the schedule now, looking at the weekend, starting with today's games. Only five games at night and four during the day, which have already started by the time you're listening to this. But Cole Hamels, Wade Miley, not a fair fight. Hamels has pitched well of late. Wade Miley, terrible against right-handed pitching. So check their lineup, see who's leading off. Mike Napoli could be a play today for you. Adrian Beltre in DFS. Fulmer and Danny Duffy, that's an interesting matchup. I like that again. Duffy's last outing really good. Shut it out into the ninth inning. Felix Hernandez, new. Yolis Chacin has seven consecutive outings in which he has not allowed more than three earned runs, and one of them came in his last outing against Madison Bumgarner. So I understand. Tristan always says this. I don't want to use a pitcher against a guy like Bumgarner or Kershaw or Scherzer because they can't win the game. But in Chacin's last outing, that was 3-3 into the ninth inning. Where do you stand on that? Would you ever consider in DFS or in daily using a guy like Chacin who has pitched well against a star like Bumgarner?
Certainly on a short slate like this, I have no issue with that. However, I mean, gets any runs support here to get the win him. Both pitchers shut out six in, suddenly no wins at all. I really don't worry about that. If we got a full 15-game slate, then maybe, I'd want to shoot for the win somewhere else. But Chacin, with these 10 pitchers, is probably number two of these 10. So why wouldn't I want to take a shot with him?
All right, looking at the rest of the weekend, Cardinals-Cubs, that's a big series. Cubs haven't lost, I don't think, since the All-Star break. And so that's something to watch there as they continue to try to catch Milwaukee. Milwaukee is in Philadelphia where it would seem to be a far easier series for them. But Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN, Michael Wacha, Jose Quintana. We mentioned Wacha yesterday, 1.01 ERA, 31 strikeouts over his past four starts, and Quintana struck out, what, 12 in his first outing for the Cubs? That's a really interesting matchup there. Quintana, by this point, should be owned in all NL-only leagues and all regular mixed leagues. But Wacha, do you use him at the Cubs and Quintana on Sunday night?
I do. You know, if I get to decide right up to the minute, then, you know, maybe I see how the Cubs are hitting going into that game. But, you know, Sunday, the rules are a little different. And while it makes it a little less likely that they're going to rest all the big guys, I probably wait until the day of to see what's going on there. I don't necessarily avoid tougher matchups on Sundays because you might get half the regulars getting the Sunday off.
It's really the same theory as why managers don't want to use, like, their non-closers in the ninth inning or extra innings. They feel like, oh, if this guy gives up a run in the sixth or seventh, I can still come back and win. In a fantasy league, in a weekly league, it's kind of the same thing. If your pitcher gets pounded on Wednesday, you still have 3 or 4 days to come back and ERA and whip. If he gets pounded on Sunday, it's over, right? Is it the same theory as that?
Yeah, it's partially that same theory there. And, it's also just a matter of, to me, and managers
hold up,
manage them differently.
AJ, you're cutting in and out again. Start it over where you say, to me.
So to me, getaway days just happen to be a little bit different. It's a situation where on Thursdays and Sundays, managers manage the games differently. And as a fantasy player, you have to react to the rosters and decisions that the manager's going to make differently.
All right. Tommy Pham's a guy to watch for the Cardinals this weekend. Also, their first baseman, Voit, let's see if he keeps on playing. And for the Cubs, Javier Baez has four consecutive games with multiple hits. He also homered the last 2 days. What is Javier Baez to you? What did you project for Baez before the season, and do you think he's ever going to make it there?
With Javier Baez, I mean, if he ever gets a firm grasp of the strike zone where he's not swinging at everything and he gets more walks, then I think he'll be a much more valuable player. But as long as the K to BB rate is going to be somewhere, 5-1, then at least for points league purposes, I can't really rely on him, even though the power, the speed combo is a nice combo and the batting average could approach 280. So, I just don't know if he's ever going to get there.
Interesting series in Arizona when the Nationals come to play there. Scherzer, Roark, and Strasburg are the three pitchers, and two of them are pitching really well. The other one is Tanner Roark. What do you do with Roark in a league? Because the way he's been struggling, he's still going to win his games because it's Washington and their offense is still great. But do you even regard him as a guy you can rely on anymore? ERA is up to 4.98 now. Last outing, 3 runs, none of them were earned. But he's really been struggling. ERA over the past month is over 8.
Yeah, it's frustrating. He has plummeted down my rankings. Now, he's still at number 50, which, is that last spot in terms of not streaming, but, you have to look at the writing on the wall and probably play the matchup game. I don't know that I would start him this weekend, even though he's in that spot in my rankings where I wouldn't necessarily take a look. But, at some point, you got to say, all right, I got to take you out until you show me otherwise.
Right, and I also want to see their lineup. Brian Goodwin's been leading off, but he's a lefty. This weekend they faced lefties in Corbin and Robbie Ray, so Ryan Rayburn could be a fill-in play. He generally bats second, I think. When they face a lefty, Wilmer Defoe, maybe you want to use him. The middle of the order is great. Top of the lineup, they still need some help. And confusingly, there really hasn't been an update on Trey Turner timetable. So I don't know if he's coming back next month or never.
Yeah, we don't know about that. I mean, they're not going to face Corbin because Corbin's going to pitch today for Taiwan Walker, who went on the paternity leave list. Maybe Walker will be back by then, so it might be Walker instead. But, your point still stands that with Turner is that, we don't know. There's no reason for them to rush him back either. So, you got to play the waiting game.
It always seems strange to me how, our schedule doesn't update the pitchers.
This was a last-minute call. This was a call they did like an hour ago, an hour before the game time.
I'm still looking. Zach Godley, by the way, is facing Roark, or at least he was supposed to. Maybe he'll face Scherzer now. But if Godley is facing Roark, and Godley has had only one outing this season, which he's allowed more than 3 earned runs, that was his last one at Atlanta, do you rather use Zach Godley or Tanner Roark?
I'd probably rather use Godley, but it's not like one of those things where I'm like slam dunk absolutely. It's just basically work's been that bad of late.
Let's see other pitchers here of note and maybe a hit or two that we think about while we're along the ride. Mike Fiers is pitching Friday, supposedly at Baltimore. Orioles a struggling team. Fiers has been great for the past month. I don't think he's losing his rotation spots. A lot of strikeouts, very few home runs. I think Fiers a pretty good pickup there. Most people would say Matt Garza, Milwaukee at Philadelphia. But the Phillies, you know, with Nick Williams batting third, they scored some runs this week. Is Nick Williams legit? Is he a guy you're going to have to think about as a top 50 outfielder soon?
I think we're getting close. I mean, there's a tendency to just dismiss those teams that aren't winning out of hand and not even watch, obviously, as a fantasy owner, it behooves you to watch because you can find these hidden gems here. I'm still a little hesitant in terms of the batting average, but he's certainly gaining momentum. He's someone to look at.
What about Homer Bailey at home against Miami? And Miami's a fractured club now. They just lost two consecutive games to the awful Phillies. Their best player ripped them and the Phillies. Rumor is David Phelps is on the way out, maybe Stanton, maybe Yelich, you know, maybe Dan Strelley. He looked awful yesterday. Homer Bailey's had some decent outings so far. Would you use him against Miami?
I would not. I still think there's just too much potential for that lineup to just crank home run after home run. And Bailey is not necessarily one of those guys that I would say is home run immune. So I'm still cautious on Bailey. Definitely a matchup pitcher, and I don't like the matchup.
What's your update on Masahiro Tanaka? In or out at Seattle?
In, but I don't have to like it.
You know what? That's how I feel. It's like, how much longer is he going to put us through this? Or is he just going to keep doing this all year long where it's one good outing, one bad outing, which is really tough because you're left guessing. And at Seattle seems like an outing where you want to use him.
I mean, when he's on, he's Cy Young stuff and Cy Young worthy. And then he'll, you know, twice out of a month, he'll not show up. So I agree with you. It's so frustrating. You know, preseason, you always say, who do you think might win the Cy Young this year? And it's always Tanaka if he's healthy. And he's healthy, and yet, I don't know. But for this one, I'm gonna start him, and fingers crossed.
There's a Coors Field series. The Pirates are there. Maybe Starling Marte can do something. Gregory Polanco, who I need to do well. Adam Frazier could be leading off, so he could be a short-term play this weekend. And, of course, we're always watching the Rockies there. You've been on record about Rockies pitchers, so I won't waste your time there. And Pittsburgh's pitchers. The only one here that, I mean, Ivan Nova on Sunday. Nova's pitched well, but he's not a strikeout guy. I can't use him at Coors Field. Can you?
No, his success is, you know, putting the ball in play and letting his defense catch it, and this is not a park where that plays. If Colorado averages less than 10 per game this series, I'll be surprised. That's how well they're hitting, and these pitchers are certainly, you know, maybe Nova is below the 10 because the other two will be over, but it's just going to be ugly for Pittsburgh this weekend in terms of the pitching. They still might be able to out-hit Colorado, but I'm not touching their pitching.
And looking at Sunday starting pitchers, Sean Newcomb against Clayton Kershaw. Now, that seems like one of those outings where you've got the best pitcher in baseball, and then you got Sean Newcomb. I mean, I kind of like Newcomb, but I wouldn't use him here. Would you?
No, I wouldn't. Again, especially because, you know, it's a Kershaw day. It's a Strasburg day. You got Quintana coming off his outing. I mean, just from the late games, I think you got enough there that you don't need to take a chance on Newcomb. Though I do think he'll probably do okay and could surprise. You know, if he's at reasonable price and he's your number two pitcher, then maybe you want to fill in with him. But I'd much rather take my chances with a guy like Jared Eichhoff facing Milwaukee at home with a chance for the win.
Any other hitters or pitchers you would like to discuss for the weekend?
You know, I would just really want to see, you know, Martinez when he comes back. And I think a lot of people will shy away from him because of the injury. And that's the chance that maybe if you can get his price to drop a little bit because you're not sure that he's going to play, you know, jump in on him. I still want to see what he does in that lineup and how the whole Arizona lineup looks once he's in there and, you know, Lobulo figures out how he wants to piece it all together.
Right, and it's against three Washington right-handers, so we should get an idea if Peralta's the leadoff guy or if he bats second, where Martinez fits in, Pollock. Very interesting to see what Arizona's lineup looks like this weekend.
Yeah, and the other guy I'm really watching this weekend is Yonder Alonso. I think in New York it'll be interesting to see against the Mets pitchers who are prone to serve up gopher balls. If he does well this weekend, I think he's gone by Sunday. I think we might be seeing some hugs and handshakes there with Yonder.
Oh, well, hashtag hug watch. I love it.
Well, they just signed Chris Carter, so I mean, there was a reason they just signed Chris Carter. It's because when Yonder's gone, they're going to move him up to play first base. You know?
But the Yankees just traded for Todd Frazier. I mean, is Headley should just be benched?
It's a different situation because the Yankees were also looking for a first baseman. In this case, they think the A's are just going to get rid of Yonder because, of course, he's got a lot of value and they're doing this prospect pooling. And I think Carter's there to step up and at least, you know, get him some at-bats once he's gone.
You know, maybe Garrett Cooper can't handle it, but I'd like to give him a couple weeks to see. I just want to see if Garrett Cooper could be their everyday first baseman, but... silly me. Anyway, watch for the Hug Watch this weekend. Trade deadline is not this coming Monday, but the following Monday in 11 days. But it certainly seems like teams aren't waiting, so there could be trades at any time. And fantasy owners should always be on the lookout for these trades because it affects value. It changes closers. It creates opportunity for people that maybe weren't playing all that much. You know, Chris Carter signs, you know, like maybe you need him in an AL-only league. I don't know. Maybe he was dropped by somebody. Just something to keep an eye on. Don't assume this all happens on that Monday. It could happen today after that. Anyway, that's it for our weekend preview. After this, we'll take a look at your questions on Hash Browns.
Hey, man.
Hey.
So we got a couple of questions. You guys good with that?
That's what the second half of the show is for. The awesome questions from our awesome listeners who want awesome answers. Let's be awesome.
Well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad, yeah.
Okay, this first one comes from Blake. He wants to know, can you rank these prospects in terms of your excitement for 2017 production? Ozzie Albies, Ronald Acuna, dang it, Acuna Matata, that's my fault, and Alex Verdugo.
All right, so he's talking about this season, AJ. I don't know if we're seeing any of these guys until September, and even then. I mean, like, if the Braves call up Albies, they're not going to put him at shortstop. Swanson's their shortstop of the future, even though he's struggling right now. And Brandon Phillips is still a Brave, so I don't know why Albies would play regularly. I guess Acuna has a shot in left field. Verdugo, I can't see getting a chance. And do any of these guys actually excite you for this season?
No, you know, the only outside possibilities, I do think that the Braves will promote Albies in September, simply because they were planning on promoting him this year. Phillips just totally outkicked his coverage, as it were, and played so well that they didn't have the opening there. So I think if you need steals, then maybe I can see him coming in like one of these pinch running capacities and, you know, getting one of those, you know, Terrence Gore, like, that's all I help you with, but I help you kind of, months. So just for that, but otherwise, no.
Man, Brandon Phillips just can't get a break in the fantasy world. He is doing exactly what he's done each of the past two seasons, hitting 290, like always, stealing enough bases to, you know, be interesting, reaching double-digit power. He does this every year. He's so underrated. Anyway.
He is, and, you know, I stood right there next to you in Bristol, Connecticut, during our baseball summit, and I said, you know, well, you know, Brandon's here now, but Albies is coming. Everyone get Albies, and well, you know, egg on my face, which is why I'm eating hash browns now.
They make good eggs and hash browns in bucolic Bristol, Connecticut, I hear. See you next year.
Where I'll be saying, hey, you know, I know Brandon's still in his hometown of Atlanta, but...
he'll be elsewhere next season. Like, Brandon, they have to move Brandon Phillips somewhere. Right?
He wants to stay, though, so I don't know. I don't know.
Move on. All right, what's next?
Next is Justin. He's getting a little impatient with Jordan Montgomery after his fourth bad start in a row. 6.41 ERA over that stretch with just 14 strikeouts. Was this a case of running into the wrong opponents at the wrong time, or is he just not worth owning?
There was a Red Sox outing in there. There was an Astros outing in there and a Brewers one. So I want to give him a little bit more time. Jordan Montgomery's schedule here. Anybody have it at their fingertips? I want to see what, like... Look, if he's facing like the teams that Walk is facing, then that's a problem. But like the Yankees can't just take him out of the rotation either. They don't have anybody else. And even if they trade for someone else, Montgomery's not the first to go. Next outing for him, Tuesday versus the Reds, and then Sunday versus the Rays. I would say that's not so bad. I'd leave Montgomery active next week. Would you?
You know, he's in my definite streaming area, and the lower half of the streaming, so I'm not, like, really counting on him. But, you know, Sabathia and Cesar are also in that exact same tier. I just, you know, there's not a lot of faith that I have in Yankee pitching in general. So, yeah, I mean, I probably will look at the matchup on the day and see if I like him or not.
All right.
Okay. This one comes from Joe. He's trying to gauge fantasy value after the Carlos Correa injury. Wants to know how valuable the three spot in the Astros lineup is. How high does Josh Reddick move up in the ranks if they nail down that position?
Yeah, Reddick had the number three spot for the first game at post-Correa. Obviously, the higher up you bat in a general sense, the more at-bats you get, and the more at-bats you get with runners on base. But that's not always the case. But, I mean, Reddick versus Gurriel, let's go there. Who would you rather own?
I'd probably rather own Reddick. I just think that if you're going to be getting the power numbers from him, even though Gurriel is going to give you a better batting average, I just see that if he is going to be batting third, then I would guess the RBIs would be more. I'm not big proponent on lineup spot. To me, there's not a lot of difference between in the 3-6 area. You know, 1 and 2 specialized roles, I think there is value to being there. And certainly 7, 8, 9 is different, especially in the National League. So, but if you're anywhere from 3-6, I don't really put too much stock into it.
It's interesting. Both of those guys and Marwin Gonzalez are still available in quite a few leagues. And Alex Bregman, all four of them are still available in like 25 to 50% of leagues. And Bregman's not producing, but I think he could if he wasn't batting eighth.
And Marwin is a fantasy all-star, even if he's not a real all-star. So I'm surprised that people once Correa went down and didn't just jump on him.
First, short, third, and outfield, 17 home runs, 55 RBI, batting .309. None of it looks fluky. I can't explain why all of a sudden Marwin Gonzalez is doing this, but sometimes when these guys just stick around for a few years as utility guys, Jose Ramirez is an example, they just all of a sudden hit. He's hitting.
Okay. This one comes from, and Kyle wrote these out for the record, you know, just because Kyle's a superstar. This is from John Land Before Time Petrie. And he's sick of Josh Donaldson. Kyle wouldn't give the stamp of approval to drop him despite my third base depth. I have Lamb, Villar, and Harrison, but I'm eyeing Jake Arrieta on waivers. Can either of you green light me to make that move?
First of all, Jake Arrieta should not be on anybody's waivers. And you also really shouldn't dump Josh Donaldson in any league either. So I kind of like to move on from this, but I'll say this about Donaldson. Did you see him get hurt the other night on a tag at third base? It was somebody on Boston who slid into him, or Donaldson like injured his thumb or something. Don't be surprised if we hear something about this today or tomorrow. Like either he misses a couple days or there's a DL stint. He's having a terrible season. Toronto looks like they're selling at this point. Wow, Josh Donaldson. I mean, he was a top 10 guy in drafts. He's batting .246 with 9 home runs. Ugh. But, yeah, I mean, if you ask me who I'd rather own between Donaldson and Arrieta, it's Donaldson, but there's no way Arrieta should be sitting on waivers.
Agreed on both counts there. And you know, it is kind of funny that these things do tend to go in waves. I mean, this season, suddenly it's the getting hit on the wrist is the injury du jour. And, you know, the sliding injuries are now becoming a thing again. Steven Souza getting hurt and blaming the mud in Oakland. I mean, it's just bizarre that once one thing happens, three more people come up with the same injury. So watch the base paths for injuries over the next few days, because it just tends to happen in groups and clusters like that.
Well, these thumb injuries, I mean, for Trout, Correa, who was it, like Chris Bryant with the thumb injury sliding into a base? It's really risky. Some of these guys wear like this oven mitt on their hand, so they can't hurt any fingers or a thumb. I think pretty soon Rob Manfred's going to say everybody must wear an oven mitt on their hands when they're on the base pass, so we don't lose.
Oh, great!
These
and then the Cubs are going to start putting in a ritual where they have to put on a puppet show for the first baseman when they get there. I mean,
well, this is a good thing, AJ, because like once a player crosses, you know, goes around the bases with the oven mitt on the hand, then they can go right into the clubhouse and take the pigs in the blanket out of the oven, so his teammates can enjoy them. In the dugout, and I'm all for that, because you have to wear an oven mitt when you take the pigs and the blankets out of the oven. We all do that, right? Otherwise, you'll burn your hand.
Absolutely.
Okay, all right. And not sure if it's over the line, but I do think that at least some of the mascots should have to wear oven mitts, and not specific to any.
Hey now.
Yeah, way to go.
The mascots out of there.
You weren't in that in the outfit, right? When that happened, right? No. Years passed.
No.
Dust in the wind. All we are is dust in the wind.
All right, two more. This question comes from Rory. He loves Jimmy Nelson's 3.17 FIP and dominance at home with a 2.39 ERA, but is a little bit unsettled about the road numbers, 4.7. He does pitch in a hitter's park, so in theory, the impressive home numbers should be enough to make him a strong play, but why the lack of love since none of you have him as a top 45 pitcher?
Yeah, that's a mistake on my part. I feel like he is a top 45 pitcher, and if I was paying more attention, I'd put him there. This home road splits mean nothing to me. It's not enough of a sample size. He's just turned good all of a sudden. The strikeout rate is amazing for a guy who never had it before. And I'm all in on Jimmy Nelson. He probably should be around 25 to 30, I think. I'm in. Are you in?
I am not in that much. I mean, look, the fact of the matter is that there's a lot of pitchers in that 30 to 60 range that look exactly the same to me. And given the fact that I don't know that the wins are coming for him, I think Milwaukee is a team that has outplayed what they're supposed to be doing. So I don't think the wins will be coming as much going forward. I'm not saying the Brewers aren't going to win the division, or it's just, I just think there's a little bit of regression there in terms of overall Pythagorean numbers and all that stuff. I like Nelson a lot, but he's still going to be in that streaming tier for me for a little bit longer.
I don't think you like Nelson at all, but we'll see.
Look.
That's a lot of strikeouts.
Be excellent to each other as long as we're going to continue the Ted Theodore Logan quote.
Okay. And what's the last one?
Last one comes from Win Kid. He wants to sell high on Mike Moustakas. Do you think that's a good idea since he's already set a career high in home runs and most of his numbers look sustainable, but a chase rate over 40% is concerning? You can tell that I didn't do these questions because Kyle has so many stats that I just don't know the answers to.
He's a soccer star.
I really miss when he's not on the show.
He's a superstar.
Who are some players I could target and or potentially buy low on in an effort to maximize value?
Odd season for Moustakas, I want to say. Walk rate divided in half, strikeout rate way up. He's basically sold out for power. He's going to get traded probably. Well, maybe not. I mean, if they're still trying to win. He's a pending free agent, I believe. But, yeah, I think he's a good hitter, and he changed his approach, and I don't see why this can't continue. But 269 batting average, I think it's around 250 over the past month. I see this continuing. I don't know why he can't end up with, 34, 35 home runs. So, I mean, why would you just – you don't dump a guy like that. If you can get something good in the trade, I'm okay with that. Who are some
players? I mean, we're looking at a guy who's not only hitting a lot of home runs, but, he hasn't hit this many home runs. No Royal has hit this many home runs. He's going for team records here because the Royals just never had any hitters who went all in on the power, I think, because of the ballpark they play in. And they've always been kind of, even in the Willie Wilson days, there was some of the speed element that just most players bought into. But, I don't see him going anywhere.
I don't think the Royals have ever had a 40 home run hitter.
No, I looked this up a few weeks ago, and he's really close to the franchise record. On pace for like even just 25 home runs is like something that the Royals don't do. I mean, 30 is big for the Royals.
And that's, that's kind of a big deal. Like, that's a good fan base. They just won the World Series. I understand why a team that would be 500 right now would not be just selling everybody. Yeah, the record is Steve Balboni with 36. How about that? A franchise record of 36 home runs. And there's going to be probably 20 guys this year who hit 36 home runs, maybe more.
And how long ago was he around? I mean, we're talking about an old record here. They 85. Just don't hit the home runs there. Yeah.
I don't think they've had anybody hit more than 30 this century. More than 30? Adai probably did it. Kendrys Morales last year hit 30. Wow. Anyway, that has nothing to do with Moustakas' value. Keep him around. He is what he is. He's going to help you in home runs, and pretty much that's it. He's not knocking in a lot of runs, not hitting for average, won't steal a base. I can't tell you off the top of my head who you should buy low on a third base. I think I can look real briefly here. I mean, Marwin Gonzalez, how about that? I'd rather have Marwin Gonzalez than Moustakas, wouldn't you?
I'd still rather have Moustakas, but again, it depends on if I just need power or if I'm looking for a full complement of stats. I think it's team-specific, but it's not that ridiculous a question.
Nicholas Castellano versus Moustakas, rest of the way.
I like the stock. I have the stock as top 50. I just really think the power numbers are going to be dwarf what a lot of people are going to give you.
Anybody I mention here, this is like a little Moustakas name game. Anybody I mention here, you're going to take Moustakas. You wouldn't take Moustakas over Kyle Seager, would you?
Yeah, but
wow.
I don't like Kyle Seager.
Okay.
I don't like Kyle Seager. And I'm not a Moustakas fan, but I think what he's doing this year puts him in Miguel Sano territory. I still want Sano more than Moustakas, but that's the territory I'm looking at him at.
Fair enough. All right, the music is stopping, getting
it is,
lower.
The only reason I didn't stop it was because when we were talking about home runs, Kyle had a note that today in baseball history was the last day that Hank Aaron ever hit a home run,
755. Does anybody know off the top of their head what the record is for home runs in a career? Like, I know 755, right? Like, we all know that number. You know how many Bonds ended up with? Do you care?
Heath just said 806.
Who's Keith? 806.
Keith is Keith Lipscomb.
Oh.
I don't know if you ever heard of him. He works in the fantasy department.
I've heard of him. I like him. Hi, Keith.
I was going to pull out the Sadahara O number at that point, but okay, fine.
I mean, Bonds passed Aaron, but like nobody remembers it was like 762, 3, something like that. Nobody remembers that number, but we all remember Hank Aaron 755, Babe Ruth 714. Of course, look who we are. Like, we're not 25 years old anymore. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe like the younger kids know Bonds' number. I'll stop talking. All right, that's all for today.
868, Sadahara O. Look it up.
So do you consider him the all-time home run leader?
No, but, compared to Bonds, I'd rather talk Sadahara O.
Do you consider Ichiro the all-time hits leader between Japan
no.
and the United States?
No, I'd still rather, because, I saw Rose play, so,
Do you consider Mike Moustakas the greatest player of all time?
In Royals history, not named George Brett.
All right, well, let's stop before we lose our jobs. We're done for today. Thank you so much for listening. Really, we do appreciate those who still listen to the Fantasy Focus Baseball. We do the best we can with the shows we have. And obviously, AJ Mass has been a fantasy superstar this season for us, and we really appreciate everything he's doing. And you will hear AJ Mass again next week as well. Daniel Dott, producer, Kyle Soppy, not here today, but does a fantastic job even when he's not here. And apparently Keith Lipscomb's listening to the show as well. Everybody have an awesome weekend. I'm Eric.
Goodbye.
The theme song for the Fantasy Focus was created and performed by Eric Hutchinson. Check out more of his music at erichutchinson.com. Thank you for listening to the Fantasy Focus. For more great podcasts, log on to the iTunes Music Store or Pod Center at espnradio.com.